Hi, it's Amy Siskin of The Weekly List and author of the book, The List. And welcome to episode 154 of The Weekly List podcast. This is the 20th segment in a section called Democracy at Risk. Welcome. We have arrived at the matchup that 70% of Americans had hoped to avoid, a rematch of Trump versus Biden. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley threw in the hat after Super Tuesday losses, leaving Trump as a presumptive nominee of the Republican Party. He enters this race having consolidated the Republican Party behind him, perhaps more of a takeover than a victory, having transformed what is now a pretty unrecognizable political party into a cult of personality. Trump has taken over the party apparatus, installing a loyalist and his daughter-in-law to run the RNC and cleaning house of any staffers who weren't 101% diehard fans. Last year, Trump spent $50 million of campaign donations to cover his legal bills. And with him in control now of the RNC, funds collected there could also be corralled for Trump's legal costs. Within the Republican Party, almost all who didn't toe his line last time have either left politics completely, like former members of Congress Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, or have totally recast themselves as Trump devotees. The last vestige may have been longtime Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who will relinquish his leadership role in November, and who also endorsed Trump when Haley dropped out. As we enter what will be an eight-month-long general election, President Biden finds himself at a low point in his popularity, with just 38% approval. Depending on the day, polling shows these candidates in a very close race, the outcome of which will likely be decided by five or six states. The good news as we head into this eight-month-long general election is that President Biden gave an extremely strong State of the Union speech, which assuaged critics about his energy and vigor, and largely served as an informal launch for his campaign. Trump's main line of attack against Biden is Biden's age, 81, even though Trump is 77, just 4 years younger. Both have had public examples of stammering and gaffes, yet Trump seems to get away with it. Just another example of how masterful he is with manipulating narratives, while our media unwittingly does his bidding by amplifying his accusations. In Biden's State of the Union, he didn't name Trump by name, rather referring to him repeatedly as my predecessor. But he repeatedly attacked Trump and his actions. One of his more memorable exchanges was, quote, "The insurrectionists were not patriots. My predecessor and some of you here seek to bury the truth about January 6. I will not do that. Here is the simple truth. You can't love your country only when you win. As president, my predecessor failed the most basic presidential duty that he owes to the American people, the duty to care. I think that's unforgivable." So with that matchup set and all the uncertainty around the outcome and possible risks for the first time of artificial intelligence and its impact on the election and the chance that it could get used for nefarious purposes, is there anything else that could stop Trump and hold him accountable for his past misdeeds? Now, in the past few podcasts, we have covered the lawsuits that could derail Trump's path to a possible second term. But before we review the status of those lawsuits, I want to start out by saying that many of us, yours truly included, in these podcasts, had been alarmed by how slowly Attorney General Merrick Garland moved to appoint a special counsel to pursue Trump's bad acts. Garland seemed obsessed over appeasing the other side and not wanting to appear political. What he didn't grasp was that there was not going to be any appeasement, no matter what he did. Trump was going to attack it. Garland should have known this by watching Trump's action for 4 years. And Garland's dawdling will not protect the institution as he had hoped. One of the first things Trump has publicly stated he plans to do is to dismantle the Justice Department. With all that said, let's update where things stand since we spoke last. We spoke last at the beginning of 2024, and since then, there have been two major civil findings against Trump. E. Jean Carroll, who had accused Trump of rape, was awarded $83 million in damages by a jury for defamation. This was after a $5 million judgment for sexual abuse last year. This award was simply because Trump can control himself in what he says or posts on social media. Even not in the courtroom, he could control himself. Trump has posted a $92 million bond, but again, he defamed Carroll one day later in a social media post, so that story may not be over. Also in New York, Attorney General Letitia James' case against Trump for inflating the value of his properties, Trump was fined an eye-popping $464 million by Manhattan Supreme Court Judge Engoron. The judge also barred Trump for 3 years from serving as an officer or director of any New York corporation or applying for loans from any New York chartered or registered financial institution. Obviously, that's noteworthy because Trump's whole campaign in the past has been built on what a smart businessman he is, art of the deal. Trump is appealing both of these rulings. But things are less sanguine on the criminal case front, the cases that had potential to halt Trump's march to the November election. Two Supreme Court moves will have major implications for the election. First, the Supreme Court unanimously ruled that a single state cannot disqualify a presidential candidate. Colorado had cited a Civil War era provision in the 14th Amendment, which doesn't specify who should enforce that provision. The Supreme Court justices decided, although part of this was contentious between them, that the responsibility, quote, rests with Congress and not the states. Ironically, this is the exact opposite conclusion that the Supreme Court came to in their decision on abortion rights. The ruling came out the day before the Colorado primary. By deciding the case on that legal question, the court avoided any analysis or determination of whether Trump's actions constituted an insurrection. Minutes after the ruling, Trump hailed the decision, which, let's not forget, three of the six conservative justices were appointed by him, hailed the decision in a social media post in all capital letters, "Big win for America." The Supreme Court again inserted itself in the presidential race in a major blow to what I thought would be the most promising hope of holding Trump accountable ahead of the election for the January 6th insurrection. This case, led by special counsel Jack Smith, was originally scheduled to begin on March 4th in a D.C. court. Trump's lawyers tried to get the case thrown out, appealing it to the Supreme Court, claiming Trump, as a former president, enjoys complete and total immunity from criminal prosecution for conduct during his time in office. The Supreme Court kicked it back down to the D.C. Circuit Court, which on February 6 unanimously upheld Judge Shutkin's decision in a strongly worded opinion rejecting Trump's claim that he cannot be prosecuted for his official acts as president. Trump's attorneys appealed again to the Supreme Court. On February 14, 6 days ahead of schedule, Jack Smith urged the justices to allow Trump's trial to proceed without further delay, saying the crimes in which Trump has been charged, quote, strike at the heart of our democracy, and there is a, quote, national interest in seeing them resolved promptly. Nonetheless, on February 28th, in an unsigned order, the justices agreed to decide whether and to what extent a former president is immune from prosecution. The case will be argued the week of April 22nd, likely meaning a ruling will not be until later in the summer. This could push a possible trial in D.C. to the fall ahead of the election. If the trial is bogged down and is not completed, which has been the strategy of Trump and his attorneys all along, and if Trump wins in November, he could, and as we all know, would dissolve Smith's role as special counsel and skate away without consequences. So the Supreme Court, after having said they don't want to get involved again after Bush v. Gore, has squarely inserted themselves into this election yet again. The other case I had a lot of hope for, the Georgia case, in which Fulton County DA Fannie Willis had been rolling up witness after witness to cooperate rather than face prosecution, has also unfortunately been sidetracked, this time by Willis's personal life. Trump's attorneys are trying to get her kicked off the case, accusing her of financially benefiting by hiring Nathan Wade, with whom she became romantically involved, as special prosecutor in the case. The judge is expected to rule this week. Either way, the perception of impropriety has definitely hurt the case in the public eye. And this sideshow has distracted from the progress Willis had been making, all but assuring the case will not be far along. It commenced at all prior to the election. Trump still will face a trial in New York in the Stormy Daniels hush money payment case on March 25th. This case is unlikely to move the needle in changing public perception regarding the outcome. And finally, Trump's attorneys are using that hush money payment trial as a way to stall out Jack Smith's second case involving classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. That case, which is presided over by a Trump appointee, Judge Eileen Cannon. Judge Cannon has granted Trump's requests for delays and extensions. She's also scheduled hearings for Trump's innumerable stall tactics in trying to get the case thrown out or limited. Jack Smith has told Cannon that Trump is trying to delay the classified documents case until after the presidential election in order to have the case dropped. But this has yet again been ignored by the Trump-appointed judge. But not all is rosy for Trump and the Republicans. The House Republicans had made a major effort to pursue Hunter Biden. That had been all we had been hearing about on Fox News for the last year. And had tried to make a case against Hunter Biden and Joe Biden ahead of the election. But that effort took a major blow when one of their main informants, Alexander Smirnova, a confidential informant in the case, was indicted for lying to the FBI. The indictment states that he had invented the claim that Biden and his son Hunter took $5 million in bribes, and that Smirnoff has a, quote, extensive foreign ties, including Russian intelligence agencies. Russia again. Trump continues to publicly back Putin and get praise from other authoritarians like Hungary's Viktor Orban. Trump went so far to set off alarm bells in a speech where he said he would encourage Russia to, quote, do whatever the hell they want to any NATO member country that doesn't meet defense spending guidelines. He has also pushed Republicans not to vote for aid to Ukraine as Russia continues their war against Ukraine. And Trump's stump speeches are back. They're again a dystopian vision of darkness and despair, full of his personal grievances and promises for retribution. Trump promises to root out the so-called deep state of civil servants, as well as lies, continuing lies, lies, lies. He promises to, quote, cast out the communists, Marxists, and fascists, and to, quote, throw off the sick political class that hates our country. He is still repeating the big lie that the 2020 election was stolen from him, saying in speeches, quote, the only way it can end where they win is a rigged election, and saying that Democrats, quote, did in 2020 is disgraceful. Still where we sit today, about a third of our country believes the big lie, almost all of whom are Republicans. Trump also portrays himself as a victim and a martyr for the court cases we have discussed. He has convinced his base that the so-called deep state is not only out to get him, but also all of his supporters. And he casts himself as their savior, the last line of defense in protecting them. So again, when I refer to the fool's errand of Merrick Garland trying to assuage Trump and his supporters that the DOJ is fair and non-political, again in these Trump speeches, in these stump speeches, Trump accuses, quote, Joe Biden and his thugs of, quote, weaponizing law enforcement for high-level election interference. Does that sound like they've been assuaged? And this is all rather alarming because he also tries to take back the meaning of words to take away their impact. He claims that the court cases, quote, Biden and the fascists that control him are really the true threat to democracy. This is an old trick he employed while in office, telling a complete bald-faced lie to control the narrative and create an alternative truth. And it's something he's quite good at, and when the media repeats it and amplifies what he says, it only serves to cement it in the minds of his supporters. I'll give you an example. This is how crazy things can get. Still, last month, a conspiracy theory surfaced about singer Taylor Swift, who is dating Travis Kelce, a player for the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, that team went to the Super Bowl. In the supposed deep state plot that had been spread by Trump and a former presidential candidate, Vivek Ramaswamy, and Fox News had a field day with this too, Swift was part of a, quote, covert government effort that in exchange for her helping Biden get reelected, the Chiefs would win the Super Bowl. Yes, you heard that right. That there was a secret conspiracy with Biden and Taylor Swift and a player on the Chiefs that they would win the Super Bowl if she would help him get reelected. Yes, it's hard to believe this, and I'm laughing even saying it. But sadly, one third of Republicans believed this conspiratorial plot. Mind you, the Chiefs did win, and they won the year before and have been a very strong team for years. But nonetheless, after they won, if you looked on social media, you could see Trump supporters posting memes blaming Taylor Swift and this conspiracy. So that's where we are, folks, as we head into this next election. And finally, Trump is back to using one of his favorite phrases, enemy of the people. This week he said, quote, I consider Facebook to be an enemy of the people, along with a lot of the media, end quote. Which media? Obviously not those who toe the line for him. For a while, Fox News did not, but now they are 101% on board. The day he made that statement, Facebook's stock dropped 4%. Remember when that happened during his presidency? Here we go again. So in closing out, what's next for the weekly list? Well, for those of us who believe in signs, I am one of them. Months ago, I had purchased tickets to the Broadway play of the name Enemy of the People. I mean, who would have thought that we would be having this conversation about Trump and Biden again? And my tickets, it turned out to be, were for March 6, which was also the day that Nikki Haley conceded and Trump became the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party. So I thought to myself on the way in, oh God, do I even want to go to this play? I mean, it just was like, oh my God, of all days, it finally hit me, and I think hit a lot of us that day, that yes, this is real. But yet, at the end of that play, Jeremy Strong, who plays Dr. Thomas Stockman, said he would give up all he has and all his family has, his health, his welfare, everything, for the truth. It is that important. Which brings me to the weekly list. The truth is worth it all, folks. We must fight to preserve truth in our democracy. So many of you have asked about the weekly list and if it will return. The answer is, if Trump returns to office, the project will resume in November 2024. Ugh. But this time I will need to do things differently. In 2016, I had no preconceived notions of what this project would be or lead to. Once it started, it was living in escalating chaos, and I was in survival mode, working 24/7, 365 days a year for 4+ years to keep up with the task. But this time, with the benefit of experience and time to plan ahead, I'm going to do things differently. I'm raising my hand, knowing I will need help. We'll be bringing the band back. Anelia Faithful, who's the outstanding designer and developer who I have been working with since 2009, and who put together the Weekly List website and helps me every week pick out the best photo to tell the story of the week, and also helped produce this podcast, which he will return. Chandler Jenrett, the editor extraordinaire who edited the list each week, will also return. I couldn't have made it through last time without them. But this time I will need more help. If Trump wins in November, I will be coming back to you all to fundraise to help fund paid employees to help me with research and listing. I will put together a comprehensive plan over the summer in hopes that I never need it. But best to be prepared and be ready to hit the ground running on November 6. The list might look a little different this time. After all, and one of the things I had hoped to point out, was that once something happens, it becomes the new normal. As for this podcast, I will continue to keep it updated with noteworthy news ahead of the election. If the project returns, I will do the podcast differently this time. This will be another element I will plan for over the summer. With the benefit of time to plan, I can be more thoughtful about what context would be most helpful to supplement the list themselves. I have also had folks ask about using the weekly list content to remind and warn people of what is coming. Just like giving birth, nature has a way of wallpapering over how bad those times were for us all, locking them away so we can move forward and survive. I am giving thought of how I can use the weekly list materials as a way to put us back in that period of time, remind us all what we felt like ahead of the November election. So stay tuned. Until then, I would encourage you all to wipe the cobwebs away and start giving thought to getting involved ahead of the November election. I have very purposely not been in your faces with politics because I know we needed a rest and I know we needed some time off. But that time off, folks, is coming to an end, and we must gear up once again to resist and save our democracy. Signing off.